Hello, friends. I'm your host, Christina, and you're listening to Radical Stepmoms, a podcast about the good, bad, and really ugly moments about raising a child that you didn't create. Here, I'll discuss the realities of co-parenting, the way stepmotherhood affects a marriage, the relationship with our stepkids, and most of all, navigating the relationship with ourselves. I want each episode to leave you feeling validated, empowered, and oh so radical. So pour yourself a LaCroix, a glass of red, or whatever, and listen in on Radical Stepmoms. Hello, you are listening to Radical Stepmoms. This is Christina. I am chatting with Michelle today. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Michelle is a licensed attorney, a certified high conflict diversion coach, as well as a certified Martha Beck life coach. So she's pretty much a radical badass. And I've interviewed her before on the podcast, and she does a lot of awesome things that we stepmoms and like blended family life just don't want to do, which we'll dive into that. But she gets into like the nitty gritty of how to communicate, how not to communicate, things to keep track of, all that stuff. So that's what we'll be talking about today. But for those who may not have listened to the previous episode, Michelle, why don't you kind of give a little bit of background on you?
Sure. Thanks, Christina. So I've been an attorney for 20 years. I don't practice family law, so I always like to make it known that, you know, I wouldn't be working with people as an attorney. But it's one of those skill sets where, you know, I can't turn off the way that my brain processes information and thinks in a creative problem-solving way. I've been a coach for 13 years. I've been through my high conflict co-parenting relationship and am thankfully on the other side of that now. So I work with clients in a lot of different ways, helping them learn how to disengage. I do education as well as one-on-one coaching. I think I've talked before about the ghostwriting that I do for clients who are in the different parenting apps.
Yes, I will say, I'm just chiming in here that I've talked to many stepmoms like on our one-on-ones who have said like, oh my gosh, we use Coach Michelle. And because we found her through your podcast, like, thank you so much. So kudos to you. That's some awesome feedback about you.
That's great. Awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
And then I also, the other piece where I kind of bring everything together is I work with clients who are getting ready for court, whether it's preparing in a one-on-one, or I work with them to get all of the pieces together. So pulling their messages together, their journal entries, whatever information I can do to consolidate for them and put in an organized factual fashion that they can then package up and give to their attorney to file as their declaration.
Yeah. So that's stuff that we really struggle with. I feel like it's such an awesome thing that you do that, because I know that emotion is such a key player in the ability to organize and prepare for court, that to have someone who is, you know, separated from what's actually happening can see it in a more logical way and not so much the emotional way.
Right. Right. Because I'm not getting triggered by other people's stuff.
Yeah. Maybe later in the episode, I'll ask you to just share some like what the Fs, as far as the things that you've seen or what surprised you. So I did ask my listeners to submit some questions for you. So I do have those. And after reading through them, I kind of came up with like the different categories that they fell under. So I wanted to start with the biggest one being communication. So navigating a high conflict ex, how you communicate, what you communicate about is a huge topic. So one of the biggest questions that I was asked was, how do you communicate with the other parent when they refuse to communicate? So either they're like not responding, or they're not being direct, or whatever, you're trying to, you know, work something out and they just refuse to communicate. What is your best tip for that?
Right. So part of it is the educational piece, because, and you probably find this, you know, with the clients that you work with, is that when you're working from a parallel parenting model, so you're parallel parenting, taking care of the needs as if you're the only parent, 9 times out of 10, there's actually really nothing to communicate about. You're not going to get the response that you need. So you have to just sort of figure out, okay, how can I work this out on my own? Now, if it's something that involves health, welfare, or education of the child, something that actually needs you to communicate, and they're not responding to you, then that's something that you want to keep a record of, right? So you'll have the record of the emails that are going back and forth, and then also keep a private journal. You know, these are the things, I'm trying to get my child into therapy because it was ordered by the court, and or it's in our, you know, agreement that we can do that. And I've reached out X number of times, my co-parent isn't responding. And so you're basically building things up that if it's big enough and important enough, you might have to go back to court, but you've kept all of your records. You've mm-hmm. shown that they're not co-parenting, which could lead to a broader, you know, concern that they're not able to co-parent. And so maybe you, you know, are ready to see if you can get sole decision-making or tie-breaking decision-making. Mm-hmm. And if it's not one of those bigger categories and it's just like a day-to-day, can we get on the same page? Where there's high conflict, that's really not possible. So mm-hmm. it kind of depends on what the things are that, you know, they're trying to co-parent about. But if it's, I want to swap a day and they're not getting back to me, then that's time to kind of look back at, okay, well, this person is always going to stonewall me. So the least amount of times that I can reach out and ask for something, the better, right? And it sucks mm-hmm. because sometimes you have to miss out on vacations or whatever it is. But eventually you just sort of get in the groove. And I think we even talked about this before because you had an issue with like vacations or something, not being able to take your stepson. And so sometimes it's just the reality of this sucks, but it is what it is. And this is, we're just going to have to learn how to navigate it. And I think you had mentioned that, you know, sometimes you just have to take a vacation without him. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, and I get it, parents don't want to hear that. But if you're not getting a response from your co-parent and it's just creating more conflict, then it's really not worth it. Again, mm-hmm. unless it's one of those bigger picture things that you really do have to co-parent on.
Yeah. As my husband often says, no response is a response. So if we're sitting, it is like, all right, fine. Like you're talking about like the bigger things that absolutely need communication. And right now we're in the situation where we completely disagree that there's a concern. So like my husband and I feel like there's a concern with my stepson, and his mom just replies and says, no, I don't think there's any concern here. And we're wanting to like move forward with supports. And she's like, no. So we're now.
The documentation is key. Right? You guys documenting everything. Every time you see something that leads to a concern, document it. But not necessarily to mom, because that's just giving her her food. Or as you said, I think the very first time we did a podcast, which I loved, stop watering the plant, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you make your own private journal so that you have all of these times that these things are occurring. Mom keeps saying, no, there's no concern, no concern. Eventually, it's something, if it's big enough and important enough, that you might have to go to court on.
Yeah. Yeah. That private journal. Yeah. Okay. So with communication, I have a question that someone submitted. I'm just going to read it the way that she wrote it. What can you do when a high conflict by a mom is now only communicating through the teen stepkids? She has them ask dad for money. She shows all communication from dad to the kids before responding, if she responds at all. She's succeeding in parental alienation and we feel really stuck. So I feel like teenagers, you know, you're running into this communication issue, right? Because they're old enough, they have their own cell phones. It's almost like, okay, might be a good thing that you don't have to communicate with her as much, but then also maybe something shouldn't be communicated to the kids. So how do you navigate?
Right.
That?
Definitely. And I've heard of, you know, where situations where parents are like pulling up the OFW and saying, you know, look at this message. And you want to keep a private journal of all of these times that the kids have come and said, you know, either that the bio mom has said, I'm showing the kids the messages, or that the kids are saying, well, mom said that you did this or told me this. Keep a record of all of that and just be really casual with the kids, right? You know, well, people say a lot of things, like if mom says, you know, you're refusing to do this or whatever. And those aren't, you know, those are adult decisions. And, you know, I don't want you to have to worry about that and then redirect. It is more difficult with teens because teenagers' whole role is to push back on boundaries and they're creating their own independence and individuation. And so they're going to push back a lot more and it's going to, you know, kind of, they're going to butt heads just naturally with their parents. And so when the other parent is telling them information, it's just one of those things where You just have to keep reiterating like, oh, I'm sorry that, you know, you're being put in the middle of this. This is an adult decision and, you know, we'll work it out. Don't worry about it. But they sometimes dig in, right? And that makes it a little bit more difficult. But that's where the journal, again, is super important, because especially if the alienation seems to be working, that's when you're going to want to probably go back to court. Because, you know, I hear alienation often. And then when I ask the parent, well, how's your relationship with your kids? Oh, it's great. Okay, well, then that's not alienation, right? There's an attempt to alienate.
But is it
successful? It's not actually working. Exactly. Yeah. But if you notice that your children are starting to take on the other parents' opinions and beliefs and whatever, then that's when you're, you know, you might want to reach out to a professional, either whether it's a therapist or your attorney, to get back into court and make sure that you're keeping those journals so that when you do go to court, you can say, look, this is what's happening. These are the comments that are being made, and organize it in a way that it's really impactful to see how often it's happening and what the behaviors are.
Mm-hmm. So in situations like this, I mean, I know I often have to kind of think, is it worth confronting bio mom about? Is it worth letting her know, hey, we know this is going on? I did an episode a month or so ago with my husband, and he said it where he's like, I just hate that she thinks she's getting away with something, right? And that she thinks we're stupid. In this scenario where, you know, bio mom is clearly communicating through the kids, is, you know, doing things that are making the other house look bad, do you feel that it's ever worth speaking up and communicating, like, we know what you're doing, please stop?
Right. I mean, so it kind of depends on a lot of things. If it's coming from a place of, I hate that she knows she's getting away with it, no. And by you sending the email, she's got her food, right? You're watering the plant. She's got it. It's her gotcha, because that's why she's doing it. She wants to know, A, look what I'm doing. B, I'm getting away with it. And C, there's nothing you can do about it, right? And so it puts her back in that position of power. Now, sometimes you want to put her on enough notice so that you can tell the court or the therapist, she's been put on notice of this and she's still doing it, right? So you kind of have to navigate, what is my goal here in sending the email? If my goal is hoping that she's going to change her behavior, she's probably just going to double down on the behavior. Yeah. If the goal is giving her notice, then you don't want to give her notice every single time, but, you know, perhaps you want to give her notice initially.
We document it to say,
right. Document that she has notice,
yeah.
But then not, you know,
expect her
in private journal. Exactly. Yeah. Doing it to expect her to say, oh, I didn't think about it that way. I can see how that would be confusing to him or harmful.
Do that.
That's never going to happen, right?
Right. Yeah. 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 The communication. And so when you're doing, you know, the ghostwriting and stuff, what do you find to be the biggest error that the people who hired you make? And then what do you do to kind of correct it?
I think just the over-engaging, over-communicating. So I think I had said earlier, 9 times out of 10, there's really no response. And to your point, you mentioned earlier that, you know, most of the messages don't need a response. So on the one hand, we've talked about a parent who's trying to get the parent to respond to something versus the parent who is getting tons, you know, their email is flooded with messages. So I think really asking, okay, is there anything in this message that needs to be communicated about? And if there is, like plucking out that one thing and responding only to that item, rather than getting trapped in the cycle of defending yourself. It's, you know, if there's wild accusations, the very simple response can be, I disagree with your characterization of the events or whatever it is. And then you go to a private journal and you write your journal. Mm-hmm. And then when you do respond, making sure that it's very BIF, right? The brief, informative, friendly, and firm. Mm-hmm. And friendly, I always say friendly-ish.
Yeah.
Like, uh-huh. A business, something you would write in your business email.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like, I hope you've had a wonderful afternoon.
Right. Also,
right.
I flipped off the camera there for a second.
Especially because, you know, if you do go overboard, it can actually come across as being
Condescending,
exactly. Sure. And it probably is.
yeah, absolutely. Oh man, I have an email I would love for you to like. So we want my stepson to start ADHD medication. Mm-hmm. It's been 6 years since he was diagnosed. We tried the natural things, trying natural things in an inconsistent dynamic, co-parenting dynamic has been not helpful. And so we're like trying to say, let's get him back into counseling. Let's get him back on his IEP supports. Like, let's do all this stuff. He's struggling with self-esteem. She pretty much replied and was like, I disagree with all of that. I think he's doing great. And then she tried to throw us under the bus in a couple different areas. Totally infuriating. But the only thing that we needed to reply to out of all that email was that she does agree to school counseling, which school ends next month. So that's obviously not going to happen, but we're going to take that as a win of, okay, at least you're going to be okay with counseling. And that's like, my husband and I are reading through the email and I'm like, I want to respond to everything that she's saying because I feel very defensive of us. But as you're saying, like, that is completely unnecessary. I have to follow my own advice and not water the plant because she's going to be super excited that I'm, you know, that we're getting upset about this.
And it's also giving her bullets to shoot back at you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then it just keeps going. Right. And so we've responded in the, I'm glad you're on board with therapy. We will be moving forward with that. Like, that's it.
And she realizes whether, you know, she won't respect it, but like, you've set your boundary and your boundary is very clear. You can go on and on about all these things. This is the only thing I'm responding to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so hard. It's so hard.
You don't
want to just defend everything, but in the long run, it is, because I would much rather just send that email and have it be done than expect another one from her that's, you know, completely trying to tear apart what we've said. Like, it's just.
That's why I always say, wait 24 hours before responding. And it's okay to type up the response that you want to send because it helps you with the download, right? You want to respond to all these things. You're angry. You want to defend yourself. Type out that email so that you can like let go of it and release it. And then you come back 24 hours and you read it and you're like, oh my gosh, there's no way I'm sending this.
Yes.
But I'll pluck this one sentence out.
Yeah.
Right. And send that, right?
Yeah.
That way you're not ruminating about it for those 24 hours.
Yep. Yep. Schedule like that time. And yeah. Mm-hmm. So when it does come to documentation, that was the other hot topic in the questions. We've touched on it a bit, but what is absolutely necessary to keep for court and what is not necessary? Like, what would like a judge laugh at you about for like bringing up go ahead.
I think it's important to document everything, right? Because if you're working with an attorney, your attorney is going to look through it and say, okay, we're going to keep these things. We're going to get rid of this, right? Now, obviously, if they're working without an attorney and they're doing it themselves, they might want to get someone else's input. And I mean, things like there's a different bedtime at the other house. They're not feeding them organic food. Courts really don't care about that kind of stuff. And really, if you're following parallel parenting, then it's mom's house, dad's house, or, you know, mom's house, the other house, dad's house, the other house. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to just sort of stay in your lane, give them everything that they need when they're at your house. And then whatever happens at the other house, as long as it's not unsafe. And by unsafe, I mean, you know, abusive, obviously. I mean, of course, you could make the argument that their cleaning supplies aren't safe or whatever, but that kind of stuff, you just have to let go.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that courts tend to say are more trivial and show that you're trying to insert your rules in their homes. So stick to the bigger things. You know, certainly if, let's say that, you know, you guys decided to go the medication route with your stepson and mom is continually refusing to give their son the medication, that would be a really big one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's, you also want him to take vitamin C and she's not giving him the vitamin C at her house, mm-hmm. that's your problem. That would be an example of something that you wouldn't necessarily put in a declaration, and the medication you would put in the declaration.
Yeah. With your experience and with your working with multiple apps, are you able to say like which app you prefer the best for being able to document and communicate between houses?
I personally prefer Our Family Wizard, and maybe it's just because I know it better than the others. I don't know. App Clues is my the one that I don't like working in the most. Now, I don't know, again, if that...
It's based on your comfort. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The thing I like about OFW is that everything is there in one place, and maybe the others are. So, you know, I think the most important thing is if it works for you. The thing I like about OFW, again, this might be in all of them, is the swap feature. And so you keep messages to just the messages, right? And so if you want to swap a weekend or they need to swap a night or something, there's not five messages back and forth about it. It's just you put it in the swap feature and it's like, I'm swapping Wednesday at 5 p.m. for, you know, Thursday at noon or whatever it is. The times are in there. The dates are in there. The other parent gets notification. They can accept it or they can reject it.
Wow. Versus
you send an email and say, can we swap Wednesday for Thursday? But times aren't discussed and maybe the kids get out of school at different times on those days and there's miscommunication because one parent thinks they're getting them right after school. Another parent thinks they're getting them at 5 p.m. And now you have to talk about where you're going to exchange. And so there's just, it's just a lot messier if you're not using that swap feature. I assume they probably all have journal entries by now, but I don't know that to be true. OFW definitely does. There's the shared calendar. They can seek reimbursement through the OFW app, and then you mark whether it was reimbursed. So it just keeps everything really clean and cuts down on the need to communicate.
Yeah. I mean, we just sent an email last night that's like, hi, can we, or what time will you be picking them up for Mother's Day?
Right. Wouldn't it be great if you could just put that in the swap and, you know, accept it and you move on and there's no communication?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I feel, I would imagine like less, again, like emotionally triggering because she responds and then I'm like, and then how is she saying yes? How is she saying no? Like, what does she?
Right, because she probably puts some, there's probably an attempt to put a zinger in there for a message. It's just an accept or decline, then that eliminates all of that stuff.
Yeah, all right. Our family wizard, got it. So, I know you're not a family or, you know, family attorney, but if you have any insights or opinions about parenting plans and specifically what works for having teens with parenting plans, things that come up that either wasn't considered when the kids were younger or you're going back to court and now considering having teens.
Yeah, there is a lot of research on this at like what age is appropriate for different schedules. And I believe that, you know, the 5-2-2-5 is appropriate for kids who are like elementary school aged, even middle school aged. I think the lower end of that is like 5 or 6, because with the younger kids, the recommendation is to have more frequent contact rather than a lengthier contact. So see the both parents more often. And then as they get older, they sort of age out of that need to see each parent more regularly. And so then with the older kids, they often will want like a week on, week off. The teenagers, because they have more activities, the fewer the transitions, the better for them. Week on, week off for the younger kids is really difficult. It's a long stretch. But the older kids do tend to ask for that by the time they be, you know, are teens, and certainly when they're driving and they can easily drive between homes. So I think every family is unique. For instance, my situation, my son is 13 and my daughter is 10. My daughter's with me 100% of the time. My son goes back and forth 50-50. And, you know, we've asked him, like, what schedule do you want? Because I wondered if he would want the week on, week off. And he actually likes the 225. He likes seeing both of us more often. And I think part of it is because my daughter doesn't go back and forth. And so it's to be able to see her more often as well. So I think every family is a little bit different within those general guidelines.
Do you find that things like, well, actually, let me look at my questions here. Yeah, kind of. So do you find that with teens, there are issues like cell phone use and, you know, like, okay, I'm just going to read this question for you because, all right. How should you handle high conflict by a mom secretly giving stepson who's 9, so not even a teen, a second cell phone? Backstory here, judge recently ordered that stepson only have one cell phone that both parents have equal access to because we continue to find concerning texts between him and biomom. Concerning meaning biomom regularly speaking badly about dad, her leaving him home past midnight, home alone, texting her about arguing and fighting. Biomom claims she took the phone away from him, so we bought him a new one. The tone, subject of the text between him and biomom on our phone versus when it was on her phone is completely different. So we know an alternative device is being used at her home. So.
The amount of time I spend talking to clients about cell phones, because it's a whole new world when we were growing up, or at least certainly when I was growing up, we had the landline phone and the long, cord dragging it in. And cell phones are difficult because it's really a computer that has unlimited access, right? And so often there's different rules in the different households. Maybe one parent has no parental controls and the other parent wants parental controls. So this is a big hotbed of arguing between the parents. It sounds like they already have, in this situation, a pretty clear court order that there's to be one phone. How they're going to find out if there's another phone is difficult. I'm not sure how they'll find that out, because you don't want to, put the kiddo in the middle. But if the other phone is staying at mom's house, would mom be communicating with the child? I guess there could be the potential of the child's being left home alone. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really sure that there's going to be any way for them to figure that out, unless the kid, comes home and says, "Mom left me home again, and I'm afraid when I'm at home." Mm-hmm. Or the parent who, suspects that there's another phone can just tell the kiddo, "Hey, if you ever need anything, and mom's not around, you can text me," so that they know if there's an emergency, they can call the other parent or text the other parent if there's no cell phone service or whatever. That's a difficult one. And it sounds like if mom's in violation of the court order, and that's something that they can easily show, then that's probably one they'd want to go back to court on. If it's just a suspicion that there's another phone, that's going to be a little bit more difficult. But generally, I get a lot of questions about cell phones, and in my group coaching program, in fact, I have a couple of stepmoms in that group, and we just had a conversation about it, because it's one of those situations where, you want to hold off on getting your kids a phone, especially a smartphone, but the other parent doesn't. And so what do you do? I think the question was, can we prevent that? Or can we prevent it from coming to our home? Mm-hmm. And I think the short answer is yes, you can, your house, your rules. But the bigger question is, do you want to? Because are they monitoring it in the other home? And if you don't let it come to your house, then you're missing out on finding out what your kid's up to in the other home. You're missing out on being able to control the content that they're getting, especially if the other parent is negligent and not really monitoring the phone, which is often the case. So it becomes one of those things where it's like, okay, how can we navigate this and allow the phone to come into our home and put up a bunch of boundaries and rules, at least that when it's in our home, these are the rules you abide by. It's not just because you bring the phone home, it's fair game, you can have it whenever you want. But at least then you're getting some of that control over your child, and you need to have protections, right? And you can do it in a way that you talk to the children about. It's not even that we don't trust you, right? Because kids want to be trusted. But it's all of these other people out in the world who have found ways to come in, and, they pose as people who are, a friend of yours, mm-hmm. and people are always who they say that they are. Mm-hmm. So having these bigger conversations around devices.
Yeah.
Is important.
Yeah. And I've talked to a lot of stepmoms too, that are dealing with that scenario where they're saying, okay, yes, we didn't really agree with the phone being here, but now, we're just going to have boundaries around it. And then the bio mom coming back and saying, well, I'm the one that paid for it. I should have full access to my kids because it's my phone. And it's then another point of conflict because, you know, we have to establish boundaries and, you know, it's just wild. I hate phones.
I know. Exactly. Exactly. And like, you know, there's no need for a smartphone at 9, mm-hmm. but someone gives them a smartphone and it's hard to back out of that. You know, I mean, you can say, well, I have this flip phone for you. You can't control what happens at the other home.
Right. Yeah. So talking about boundaries, this is a good transition. I'm going to read another question here. Bio mom goes through ups and downs. Through the downs, it's really rough. She speaks very badly about me and my husband, throws everything we've done wrong in our face. However, she'll then act as if nothing has happened and try to make small talk with us at events. I want to tell her that I don't need the phony small talk. I am here for my stepdaughter only and not to pretend to like one another. Would that be inappropriate and considered high conflict?
Telling her that, yes, I wouldn't vocalize that to her. It's also watering the plant, right? Giving her what she wants. She wants a reaction. She wants to know that she's getting under your skin. So you can set the boundaries without telling her that this is the boundary, right? So make sure that if it's an event, they could send a message saying, in order to reduce or eliminate the conflict that our children are around when we're in person, you know, I will say hello and that's it, basically, right?
We don't need to set the expectation.
Yeah. And it's a we. It's not just don't speak to me. It's best for our kids if we don't interact, mm-hmm. right? That way it feels the blow is a little bit less than if it's don't talk to me at events because I don't need that kind of relationship, right? So, and then the boundary is I'll be cordial to you basically when we're all there, but we don't need to have conversations. And just find something, you know, if you're at a sporting event, try to put some physical distance in. If the parent comes up and starts talking to you, find someone else to move into a conversation with. Have that plan ahead of time so that you're not stuck there with the kids and the co-parent or the, you know, in most cases here, the bio mom, where you feel like you're trapped into a conversation because mm-hmm. the kids also sense that. They know that you guys aren't, you know, one big great family. And so they sense that and they feel like, oh gosh, you know, when's the other shoe going to drop? What's going to happen here? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the really frustrating things when I hear courts or professionals saying, you guys just need to figure out how to get along, right? Like have backyard barbecues and all this stuff. And it's like, no, we're looking at this the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Yes. In a perfect world, if the parents got along and there was no conflict, of course, that's going to be best for the children. But in this situation where you have one parent who has these character traits that are high conflict, and there's going to be high conflict every single time you interact, that's not what's best for the kids. The kids aren't able to settle their nervous system when they have that feeling of what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's such a great point. I mean, we feel guilty in a lot of ways for, we should just suck it up and do it for the kids and stuff. But I think, you know, we minimize what the kids are actually feeling in those situations, and they're smarter than we think, and they can pick up on the tone. And, you know, I've worked with stepmoms who are like, you know, their stepkids have been completely vocal of like, I don't want you all showing up.
Right.
Because it's weird, right? And I will say too, like I deal with this exact situation, so I can relate to the stepmom in that, you know, I have a keyboard warrior bio mom who will, you know, write whatever she wants and be, you know, throw her venom. But then, you know, we show up at drop off or at an event or whatever, and she's all smiles and, you know, engaging with my daughter, and it just drives me crazy. I chalk it up to her own anxiety. And that I know that she can't handle conflict face to face. And so she's doing what she can to soothe herself in the moment. So in a way, I kind of play the game where I'm like, okay, sure. Yeah, I'll be all smiley with you, you know, and to my own boundary and my own what I feel comfortable with. But I just know that it's her phony small talk, but it's
right. Also smiles are fine. Yeah. But just don't find yourself in protracted conversations because soon as you do, it could be a conversation about, oh, wasn't that performance cute or whatever? And then the next thing you know, in front of the kids, they'll say, oh, I didn't get your child support payment or whatever right. it is, right? Yeah. And then you're totally bushwhacked and it's like, oh gosh, what do we do now? There's like this you know, high conflict conversation. The kids are here. They feel it. I don't know what to even say.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll take advantage of those opportunities for sure.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about boundaries, parenting plan, documentation, communication. Are there things that we've missed or that you wanted to share and have listeners know about the services you provide, the tips you give?
I think the only thing that we didn't really talk about is the groups. And I do offer some group coaching programs. And I'm actually working on putting a stepmom group together because I have a lot of stepmoms. But in my what I call my dad's group, the stepmoms usually just join in that group. And we meet every other week for an hour. It's a great way for clients to get, you know, some short individual one-on-one coaching for a particular issue that they're having, and also see other families, how they're getting coached through their issues. It's a great way to connect with other people. If we've covered, you know, the different ways that I work with clients on helping them to communicate and kind of tee their case up so that if they do have to go to court, they have all of the pieces in place. I think that's what's really important, is because it can take on sort of a life of its own, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Having to document everything. But also, I feel like documenting it also helps release it, right? You're not carrying it around. It's like, okay, I've checked that box. It's there. I'm not doing anything with it right now. I'm just going to move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so much easier to do that than having to like sift through hundreds of emails over the past 5 years to, right. to wait, when did she say that? Isn't that how that went down? Yeah. Yeah. Well, how can people find you? Where can they follow you? All that stuff.
Sure. So Instagram, Coach Michelle SD, or my website is coachmichelle.club, C-L-U-B. My email is info@coachmichelle.club.
Awesome. And I will put all that stuff on the show notes so people can find you there. Well, thank you so much. You're in the background of a lot of these high conflict conversations. So can you just leave us with one of your WTF moments, of one of the things that just kind of caught you off guard while you're in maybe Our Family Wizard and what you had to manage?
I think something that recently caught me off guard, it wasn't an OFW, but a client got a text message from her co-parent with the kids kind of like mucking up the backyard. And it, I think the most shocking part is that there was another like family in the text string, because I think the other family's child was sleeping over. And the other parent, who wasn't involved in the co-parenting relationship, said something like, "Wow, I can't believe you're letting the kids do that to your yard," or something. And the parent said something like, "I'm letting them like reduce the value of my home. It's good for my divorce," or something. And it was meant to be like funny, I guess, but I was just like really taken aback, like, wow. And it kind of came back to the conversation that I have often with clients when they're like, "Oh, but my co-parent, everyone thinks they're wonderful. And, you know, I hate that they're perceived this way." And I always tell people, look, if you aren't the one telling people what they are like, they will 100% show who they are. It might take a little bit of time, but they will always show who they are. And it's so much better to come out through a natural unfolding rather than you saying, "This is what we're going through," because people don't want to hear that, right? Especially people who don't know you well. You meet them, they don't want to hear, they don't want to be put in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's gossipy.
It feels like you're trying to like forge an alliance, right? It's like you're on this team or you're on this team. But if you just let things naturally unfold, they always show who they are.
Yeah. My mom always digs her own grave. I don't even have to hand her the shovel. She just does it herself.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's wild. Yeah. All right, Michelle, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. Everyone, reach out to her, especially if you are preparing for court or you're needing that little bit of separation as you're trying to navigate the high conflict conversations. She is fabulous. Thank you again. As always, be well and stay radical.
All right, ladies, the episode is over, but do you want a little more? Come find me on Instagram and join the community at Radical Stepmoms Podcast, or schedule a one-on-one session and get that personalized support, or become a Radical member and gain access to exclusive content like bonus episodes and merch. Radical Stepmoms is so much bigger than a podcast. Check out the details and the notes on this episode.